Hey everybody, Josh Peck here again, talking to you today. I wanted to keep these videos going because I think it's important. There's just a lot of confusion within the church about New Age. What is New Age? How much New Age is acceptable? And you know, most would say, obviously, zero, 0% of New Age is acceptable to Christianity. Yet a lot of Christians are unknowingly accepting a lot of New Age practices, New Age beliefs, ways of thinking, and it's just not compatible with Christianity. You got to pick one or the other. So that's the point of this series of videos talking about this. It's important. Now I'm getting shadow banned and demonetized left and right. So if you are one of the lucky few who are actually allowed to see this video, please share it. Give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, make sure you subscribe and click on the bell to let YouTube know you always want to be notified. But you're probably going to have to just bookmark my YouTube channel and just check it every day, or just go to joshpeckdisclosure.com. Today, I wanted to talk about the personal God of Christianity weighed against this idea of an impersonal universal force of New Age and how that actually ties in with Leviathan of the Bible. Believe it or not, Leviathan in the Bible from the book of Job, same with Behemoth, are not dinosaurs. They are not dinosaurs. So we're going to be talking about that, what they actually are. There's actually a really rich history of belief with these two creatures and others in the surrounding areas. But you know, just to start off. Oh, and I should mention too, this information. The reason that I'm talking so much about this is, not only because it's important, but Stephen Bancars, who is a very popular New Age blogger, who has since converted, come to Christianity, gave up his all of his money and his house and cars and everything to follow Jesus. He and I wrote a book together called The Second Coming of the New Age, which is available now at skywatchtvstore.com. It comes with an official collection that has other books and DVDs and MP3 interviews and lots of different things that you can't get anywhere else. And there is a link directly to that in the description below if you want to check that out. Also, keep an eye on Skywatch TV for the episodes that are airing right now. So make sure you check those out. Now, it's popular in the modern world, especially within New Age, to think of God as an impersonal force rather than a personal father. And this comes out in a variety of ways. But how often have we heard people, sometimes even Christians, complain or even just lament that their prayers are not being answered? You know, many times when a person feels this way, they see the prayers of their friends being answered, yet not their own. You know, they'll think, why didn't it work for me? Now, in the secular world, this plays out at times when an individual notices people around him seem to be accomplishing and achieving more in life. And, you know, he'll notice good things happening to less deserving or even bad people, and bad things happening to himself. And it's almost as if there's an unconscious belief in fairness, justice, equality, that type of stuff. Yet these things are generally understood more as a force rather than coming from a person, a God person. Now, in New Age, spirit guides and angels are regarded as having personalities, but the overall governing force of the universe is generally seen as lacking personhood. And when one meditates, the goal is to tap into an energy rather than communicate personally with the creator. Now, if there is any communication whatsoever, it's generally with a spirit being lower in the hierarchy than the overall force of the universe. A personal relationship with this force is impossible because it's not a person. It doesn't have attributes and it lacks preferences of any kind. Now, Christianity is different. Christianity offers something richer and deeper than trying to tap into a force or energy field. So the Bible describes a God who is a person, not a force, and who loves his children. Now, of course, because we are all subject to our modern culture at times, Christians can sometimes fall into the trap of inadvertently treating God as a force rather than a person. If God is a force, and if a prayer is answered favorably for one person, then that same prayer, if said in the exact same way, should be answered the same no matter what or who utters it. Now, yet this is obviously not the case. While New Age, along with Satanism and witchcraft, which we talked about in a previous video, rely on practices to achieve desired results, Christianity understands God as a person who the individual must speak with, not tap into or channel. If there is a desire, the Christian is expected to ask God. And at that time, God, through his wisdom, may decide to answer the prayer favorably or unfavorably. So in short, prayer is not a spell or an incantation. Prayer is speaking with God, sometimes to ask things, sometimes to just talk. And if a question is asked, it's up to God how he will answer it, if at all. Now, it's similar to how a good father interacts with his children. So right now, at the time that I'm recording this video, I have three kids, one on the way. And while I love them all equally, I interact with them all in different ways because they are individuals. So each child, and any of you who have children, you know this is true. Now, each child has their own strengths, their own weaknesses, and ways they communicate with me. For example, my youngest son, Adam, he's still under 2 years old. So verbal communication with him is very limited. However, it's very, very limited. However, I show him that he's loved in different ways. For example, through playing and chasing him through the house and, you know, roughhousing and that kind of stuff. He just cracks up, or picking him up and throwing him in the air and catching him. You know, he loves that. So I can show him love with that type of thing more than I could verbally. Now, my oldest daughter, Jacqueline, she's 7 years old, so she can understand a lot more than Adam or my other son, Nathan, who's 4 years old. Nathan is learning things now that Jacqueline already has learned. Also, because they each have different interests and different ways of looking at the world, communication and interaction is a bit different. For example, Jacqueline communicates more verbally, while Nathan would rather be doing something to interact with me, like building blocks together or something like that. Now, there's situations where Jacqueline and Nathan could both ask me for the same thing, and I might say yes to one, but no for the other. For example, Jacqueline might come up to me and ask to stay up an hour past her bedtime. And because I've let her do it before, and she's proven that she can get up without any issue the next morning for school, she's shown responsibility, that's something that she can handle well. Then most times I'll tell her yes. Now, if Nathan were to ask, it's a little different. I would likely say no because of his age and attitude when he doesn't get enough sleep, because he's still four. When he doesn't get enough sleep, he gets kind of whiny and bratty and stuff, and he doesn't handle it very well. So he's not old enough. He's not mature enough to handle an extra hour. Now, it doesn't mean he did anything wrong necessarily. I mean, it doesn't mean that I love Jacqueline any more than I love Nathan. It only means that they're both individuals with their own strengths and weaknesses. Now, according to Christianity, our relationship with our children can serve as an example of how God interacts with us. We all have a personal relationship with God, with our Father. We are all individuals. God himself is an individual with things he likes and things he doesn't like. He has his own set of attributes and preferences, and he also knows us better than we know ourselves. So when we pray and talk with him, he'll communicate back to us according to what he knows is best. He may say yes to something we ask, and he may say no. Maybe he sees that we have a desire, and he'll say no at first, but then he'll guide us through a time of learning and maturing to where that no can turn to a yes in the future. That could be it too. It might not seem like he's saying anything at all at times, but to the Christian, God is always there. He's always taking care of us, and he's always listening when we speak to him. It's just like Nathan right now. He would like to stay up an hour later, and I said no. I said no so long ago, he probably doesn't even remember, but I'm guiding him through a path of learning right now because to eventually be able to let him stay up an extra hour someday. So that takes time. God kind of deals with us that way. Now, this brings us to the chaos dragon Leviathan, and we can compare this against the New Age impersonal force who can't guide or direct you into anything. In New Age, you're your own guide. There's nothing, you know, you have like ascended masters or you have spirit guides, but and they might be able to help you. but even they're on their own path and in New Age, and they can only get you so far. But ultimately, you're your own God and you decide your own path and destiny, which sure sounds great on the surface, but it's not, because we as humans, we just got to realize that we don't know anything. You know, we've never been to the afterlife and have come back. Like, we haven't been literally dead and resurrected in the way that Jesus has. You know, people have had near-death experiences, but again, those are near-death. They're not fully dead, dead for a week, you know, dead for 3 days, and then you come back. A true resurrection like Jesus had. Now, people might point out Lazarus, but again, Jesus was the one that initiated that. Now, strangely enough, the writers of the Bible did believe and describe a type of force in reality, but it was seen completely different from what New Age teaches today. Now, in the ancient Near East, there was an understood personification of the impersonal force of chaos. The ancients called it Leviathan, and this entity was seen as a type of sea dragon, even though it was personifying something that was impersonal. Now, in ancient times, the seas were associated with chaos because it was dangerous and deadly. There were also land beast personifications of this as well, since chaos is not limited to only the sea. But there were other names for this force and similar entities to Leviathan, depending on the region and ancient text of the ancient Near East. So there was Latanu, Lotan, Behemoth, Tiamat, Mot, Seth, Horus, Cerberus, etc. The Enuma Elish is the Babylonian epic of creation, describing the birth of the gods, universe, and human beings. And in the beginning, according to the story, there was nothing else except chaotic water everywhere. And out of the movement of the water, the waters divided into fresh and salt water. The fresh water was personified as the god Apsu, while the salt water was personified as the goddess Tiamat. Though these two entities came from the birth of, through these two entities came the birth of the younger gods. Now, the younger gods, they were noisy and they were troubling Apsu, so he decides to kill the younger gods. Tiamat hears of this and words of her elder son Enki. And by the way, Tiamat is comparable to Leviathan. And I'm telling this story to show that this isn't only in the Bible. There's other places where you can find these types of themes. It doesn't mean that they're true or they're telling the whole story. Of course, we'd want to put the Bible first. But this was very much in the culture at the time. So the younger gods were noisy and troublesome. Troubling Apsu, so he decides to kill the younger gods. Now, Tiamat hears of this and warns her eldest son, Enki, or sometimes Ea, who then kills Apsu. And Tiamat becomes angry over Apsu's death. She summons the forces of chaos and creates 11 monsters to destroy the younger gods. So Enki and the other younger gods fight against Tiamat, but they're unable to win the battle until Marduk emerges as a champion among them. So Marduk kills Tiamat by shooting her with an arrow, splitting her into two pieces. Marduk creates the heavens and the earth from Tiamat's corpse, half to make the heavens, half to make the earth, and then appoints jobs to the younger gods and binds Tiamat's 11 monsters to his feet as trophies. And then Marduk talks with Ea, or Enki, you know, recognized as the god of wisdom, and decides to create human beings. Ea creates Lulu, the first man. Lulu's job is to help the gods in their task of maintaining order and keeping chaos restrained. The story then ends with a long praise for Marduk by, you know, for everything that he did. And the entire story is about chaos being subdued by the destruction of a great sea beast. So in other words, the sea beast is a symbol of chaos. Now, a similar story can be found in the Ugaritic Baal cycle. So Ugarit was an ancient city located at what is now Ras Shamra in northern Syria. And the Baal cycle isn't as much about creation as it is a competition between gods in order to win a position of rulership with the supreme god El. It describes a battle between Baal, meaning Lord, and Yam, meaning sea. So we get another allusion there to the sea. And another battle between Baal and Mot. And Mot means death. Now, Yam is also called Nahar, meaning river, and is also described as a sea monster with seven heads named Latanu, the Canaanite word for Leviathan. So that's how it connects with Leviathan from Job. But in the Baal cycle, Yam is a symbol for the sea and the forces of chaos, comparable to Tiamat in the Enuma Elish. Baal defeats Yam and is declared king of the other gods, yet he's still under El. He's given the titles the Rider on the Clouds, Most High, and is described as having an everlasting dominion. Now, as we can see, the cultures in the ancient Near East personified chaos as a sea beast, sometimes with a land beast counterpart, such as in the Bible. We have Leviathan and Behemoth. And they understood that the universe itself was pervaded with a non-living yet very real chaotic force, an impersonal chaotic force. And they had to have some way to describe it, so they did this sea beast thing. But one that we needed divine protection against. So the basic idea behind this was to answer the question, why do bad things happen in the world? You know, why, what is chaos and why does it exist? As is stated in the Bible, especially in the book of Job, the answer is because while chaos or Leviathan is subdued right now, it is not yet vanquished. So we kind of have this balance between chaos and order, and that's life. But it will be restored. It will be completely vanquished, not just subdued, when God deems it time to restore all of creation to Edenic conditions. So chaos entered the world when sin entered the world. The main point is, yes, the world is chaotic, and yes, bad things happen to good people, but God ultimately is in control and is not allowing chaos to have full reign over the planet. So the book of Job is a great source for this type of question. When Job questions God and essentially suggests God should be running things differently, God challenges Job with a series of questions. And this is where we're introduced to Behemoth, the personification of chaos on land. And we may as well read that. Job 40, 15 through 24 from the ESV says, "Behold, Behemoth, which I made as I made you, he eats grass like an ox. Behold his strength in his loins and his power in the muscles of his belly. He makes his tail stiff like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are knit together. His bones are tubes of bronze. His limbs like bars of iron. He is the first of the works of God. Let him who made him bring near his sword, for the mountains yield food for him, where all the wild beasts play. Under the lotus plants he lies, in the shelter of the reeds and in the marsh. For his shade, the lotus trees cover him. The willows of the brook surround him. Behold, if the river is turbulent, he is not frightened. He is confident, though Jordan rushes against his mouth. Can one take him by his eye or pierce his nose with a snare?" Again, that's from Job 40, 15 through 24. Now, next, we're introduced to Leviathan, the personified sea beast of chaos, and this is Job 41. It says, "Can you draw out Leviathan?" Now, that one that we just looked at was Behemoth. I don't remember if I said Behemoth or Leviathan, but that first one was Behemoth. Now we're introduced to Leviathan. Apologies if there was any confusion there, but this comes from Job 41. It's the whole chapter, but "Can you draw out Leviathan with a fish hook or press down his tongue with a cord? Can you put a rope in his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make any pleas to you? Will he speak to you soft words? Will he make a covenant with you to take him for your servant forever? Will you play with him as a bird, or will you put him on a leash for your girls? Will traders bargain over him? Will they divide him up among the merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hands on him, remember the battle. You will not do it again." Before I go into verse 9, I just want to say this is part of how we know this is not a dinosaur. If it was a dinosaur, these things would have been possible. It might have been difficult, but it would have been possible. It wouldn't have seemed ridiculous to Job. Yet if this is a spiritual being, if this is some type of personification of chaos, then of course, no, spears aren't going to work. None of this stuff is going to work. So just keep that in mind. These are not dinosaurs. Continuing on, verse 9, "Behold, the hopes of a man is false. He is laid low even at the sight of him. No one is so fierce that he dares to stir him up. Who then is he who can stand before me? Who has first given to me that I should repay him? Whatever is under the whole heaven is mine. I will not keep silence concerning his limbs or his mighty strength or his goodly frame. Who can strip off his outer garment? Who would come near him with a bridle? Who can open the doors of his face? Around his teeth is terror. His back is made of rows of shield, shut up closely as with a seal. One is so near to another that no air can come in between them. They are joined one to another. They clasp each other and cannot be separated. His sneezing splashed forth light, and his Eyes are like the eyelids of the dawn. Out of his mouth go flaming torches. Sparks of fire leap forth. Out of his nostrils come forth smoke as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. See, sounds a lot like a dragon, right? Like a sea dragon. Even in China, they have depictions of a fire-breathing sea dragon type of thing. So this is not a dinosaur. Continuing on, verse 21, his breath kindles coals and a flame comes forth from his mouth. In his neck, a bright strength and terror dances before him. The folds of his flesh stick together, firmly cast on him and immovable. His heart is hard as a stone, hard as the lower millstone. When he raises himself up, the mighty are afraid at the crashing. They are beside themselves. Though the sword reaches him, it does not avail, nor the spear, the dart, or the javelin. He counts iron as straw and bronze as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him flee. For him, sling stones are turned to stubble. Clubs are accounted as stubble. He laughs at the rattle of javelins. His underparts are like sharp potsherds. He spreads himself like a threshing sledge on the mire. He makes the deep boil like a pot. He makes the sea a pot of ointment. Behind him, he leaves a shining wake. One would think the deep to be white-haired. On earth, there is not his like, a creature without fear. He sees everything that is high. He is king over all the sons of pride. And there's another one there, verse 33. On earth, there is not his like. Okay, so again, not a dinosaur, but it's these two things are personifications of chaos. Now, God makes the point that Job is unable to even face Leviathan and Behemoth. Job is mortal and not eternal. Job does not know enough about spiritual and physical reality to question God's reasonings for doing things. So instead of questioning, Job should trust in God that he knows what he's doing and understand there is information Job doesn't have about the nature of chaos within creation. And it's the same for us today. But when tragedy occurs, such as, you know, mass shootings or hurricanes or other things, they are expressions of chaos. Now, sometimes that includes intelligent evil, such as, you know, in the cases of mass shootings. But when the chaos itself is antagonistic and hostile to humanity, God is ultimately in sovereign control over this chaos. We don't have to fear it because God subdues chaos. Now, we still have to be smart about it. You know, we still have to respect it and be, you know, be careful. You know, that doesn't mean if a hurricane's coming, then we should stay in our house. You know, we should still get out of there. But ultimately, this chaos, it's not going to overtake the world. Now, there are parts in Revelation that seem to say that, you know, it will at some point. There's going to be a point where God releases his subduance, if that's a word, subduance of Leviathan, and we'll let the beast from the sea and the beast from the land, we'll let Leviathan and Behemoth run amok all over the earth. And that's when things get so bad that they've never been that bad before, giving people one last chance to finally repent. But, you know, a lot of times we don't realize how in control God is. But at that time, you know, they will. Now, Scripture gives us things that we can do as Christians in light of tragedies like that, you know, prayer, loving one another, and they don't include giving all the attention to the terror of Leviathan while disregarding the power of the Almighty. Now, while ancient cultures understood the universe to be permeated with an impersonal force of chaos that threatened our existence, the New Age takes a different approach and sees this impersonal force as something to be incorporated into one's own spirituality. You know, they assume rather naively that the background force radiating in the created world must be benevolent and life-giving, even though the universe is very chaotic. It's a very chaotic and death-filled place. Look at any other planet except Earth. You would not want to live there. Venus is a very good example of a place you would not want to live, and you couldn't even if you wanted to. The universe itself is very chaotic, and it's the only safe haven that we're even aware of is here on Earth. Now, instead, the energy of the universe in New Age is fully embraced without a second thought given to what kind of energy they might be embracing. In truth, it's chaos. They are embracing Leviathan. You know, the danger is if the biblical description is correct, New Age believers are inadvertently tapping into the energy or force of chaos that entered into creation at the fall. Perhaps even the same one modern science says is responsible for the gradual decline and disorder of all things in the universe, namely entropy. That's what they're tapping into. They're tapping into a spirit of chaos, of evil and death, and they don't realize it. We document in our book, me and Steve document in our book, that there's cases where people try to do yoga or they try to do, you know, this chakra stuff or whatever, and they end up going insane because of it. Because with the chakras, it's a coiled serpent, the Kundalini spirit. It's like a coiled serpent that goes up your back. They're tapping into chaos. Now, what if the energy force we're connecting with here, or that New Agers are connecting with, is the same one that ancients were terrified of and the same one causing death, decay, and degradation in the natural world? You know, a simple thing such as meditation can turn into an open door for chaos to enter into your life. I mean, this is exactly what happened to me, as I talked about in previous videos. Now, while mine was more of a spiritual manifestation of chaos, because there were definitely demons and things, but it might not always come out that same way. Chaos could come in forms unrecognizable to us as humans living in a fallen world. You know, if we get hurt or if a loved one gets sick, we may, or if we lose our job or if we go through a divorce, we don't typically see these things as any more than just what life usually has to offer, right? But what if that's not the end of the story? What if there's a reason these things occur to some people at certain times rather than others? What if there are things we humans are doing to invite the old chaos dragon into our lives? Now, the New Age movement is in the business of bringing people into contact with the impersonal energy force of the universe, not considering that the universe is a chaos-driven place, and has been understood by such, you know, by the same cultures that they so highly revere. So, you know, the Apostle Paul understood that all forces of destruction have their origin in the God of this world. We get that from 2 Corinthians 4:4, who he calls the prince of the power of the air, Ephesians 2:2. Quote, it could be that the air indicates the lower reaches of the spirit realm, and therefore emphasizes the proximity of this evil power and his influence over the world. That's not obviously Ephesians 2:2, but again, let me just repeat that it could be. My apologies. In my notes, I have a quotation mark right after Ephesians 2:2. So I thought I was going into a verse there, but it was a mistake. I'll just back up a little bit. So the prince of the power of the air is in Ephesians 2:2. Now, it could be that the air indicates the lower reaches of the spirit realm, and it emphasizes the proximity of this evil power his influence over the world. Now, in later Judaism, the air is actually thought of as the region under the firmament, as in 2 Enoch 29:4-5. And here is a quote: "And I threw him out of the height with his angels, and he was flying in the air continuously above the abyss." End quote. Now, Leviathan and the chaos it represents belong to the dominion of Satan, who brought death and chaos into the world through sin. And we should not assume that just because we're in touch with an impersonal force in the universe, that this force is benevolent or from a benevolent source. The Bible tells us at least one impersonal universal source is destructive, Leviathan, and from a malevolent source, Satan. It also tells us to avoid the practices used to bring oneself into contact with this force, such as meditation, you know, trances, chanting, drugs, all that sort of stuff. And these practices bring us not only in contact with the force itself, which already opens the door for chaos to enter our lives, but also the personal spiritual forces overseeing such practices. We get that again from Ephesians 6. That makes it doubly as dangerous. Now, the New Age movement is obsessed with trying to connect with this impersonal force of nature, not realizing that the impersonal forces of nature were understood by the ancients to be so chaotic as to be personified in the form of sea monsters and dragons who threatened the survival of the human race. If science, the Bible, and the Mediterranean world reveal that chaos is the universal force fueling cosmic ongoings, then perhaps the New Age practice of tapping into the impersonal forces of the universe is an invitation to destruction. Now, strangely enough, while many New Agers recognize an impersonal force that drives the entire universe, there's still a belief in other spiritual beings. And these beings are not malevolent like the dragon of chaos, you know, of course, according to them. They're understood as benevolent. But again, in my own personal experiences, I had encounters with spirits that I thought were benevolent and they weren't. They only knew how to act benevolent. Now, many times these beings are understood as making up a hierarchy within a pantheon of powerful beings at the top. And this pantheon is understood as consisting of personal beings rather than impersonal forces. However, the overall impersonal force still drives everything. The books of the Bible describe something quite different. There's not this type of hierarchy of equally set placed beings. There's God at the top. Now he's got his divine counsel. He has angels, good angels and things, but there's also a fallen world. And then there's this chaos stuff that permeates our physical reality. So that's going to conclude what I wanted to talk about today. This is why things like yoga and meditation, while on the surface they seem harmless, or even mind-altering drugs, and you know, on the surface they seem harmless. But anything that if you're not trying to connect with Jesus in the way that he describes on how to do it, in the way that he teaches, picking up your cross, following him, reading the word, meditating on the word. That doesn't mean that you meditate in the New Age fashion. It means that you read the word, try to understand it, learn. New Age meditation is very submissive. You just kind of allow any thought or anything to breeze through you. But what's really happening is you're letting chaos breeze through you, because that's what is permeating our reality right now. Chaos is subdued, yes, but you can give it more power by allowing it into you like that. Instead, we're supposed to resist that. Instead, we follow Christ and in the way that he says to do it. You know, if we try to reach Christ by submissively meditating, it's not going to work, and we're only inviting chaos back in. So you either get Christ or chaos. That's what you have. Those are your choices. Jesus lays out perfectly how to have a stronger relationship with him. And New Age lays out perfectly how to have a stronger relationship with chaos, with death and destruction and entropy and evil and all this stuff. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. And please leave me a comment. Don't forget to subscribe, click the bell, and tell YouTube that you want to always be notified every time a video comes up. If you're one of the few that actually got notified of this, please share it with other people and ask other people to subscribe to this channel too and click the bell. And please visit joshpeckdisclosure.com. You'll get there's a bunch of videos and books and stuff there. Lots of information that you guys can check out. I'd appreciate it. joshpeckdisclosure.com. And if you want to pick up the book, skywatchtvstore.com, or just click on the link in the description below. It'll take you right there. Keep an eye out on Skywatch TV to watch the episodes that me and Stephen Bancars have recorded together. And just keep an eye out. We got some upcoming things. I just recorded an interview with on Caravan to Midnight with John B. Wells. Had an excellent discussion with him. So go to caravantomidnight.com and check that out. I'm not sure if it's out yet, but just keep an eye out for it. It will be. And all that being said, thank you all so much. I really appreciate the support and all the views from people who are actually able to view these videos and who are willing to take the time. So love you all. Thank you so much. And until next time, take care and God bless.